Well, what's that text where two or more are gathered? There's conflict. That's the text of humanity, isn't it? Where two or more are gathered, there's conflict. Today we're going to be talking about power struggles. You like power struggles? Make sure this is working. Do you like power struggles? If what? If you're the winner, you like a power struggle. Do you really? You like a power struggle if you're the winner. Go ahead.
I was supposed to say, if you're the top dog out there, you don't mind. But
okay, so if you're the top dog, you don't mind the power struggle. That's interesting. That's interesting.
Well, I think we're in a power struggle between good and evil. It's not a very pleasant thing that we experience sometimes.
Okay, you think we're in a power struggle with good and evil. Okay, do you think God's in a power struggle? No?
Yes.
Someone said yes. I heard a yes. I heard a no. I like it. We got a little going here.
A conflict.
Okay.
I said we got conflict here.
We got conflict. So, how many think God is in a power struggle with the devil? No? You do? Okay. The rest of you think he's not in a power struggle with the devil?
No, he's already won. He already knows he won.
Well, if you're a winner, doesn't mean you were in a power struggle.
We're in.
He was earlier, but now that.
So you think he was earlier in a power struggle?
Yeah.
Okay, so you think he was in a power struggle, but now he's won and it's over.
It's over. It's finished.
No, God's the top dog.
God's the top dog, so he's the winner. Go ahead, Paul.
He didn't have a power struggle. He had a reputation struggle.
A reputation struggle.
He knew where he stood all along, and he had no real conflict with it. But to show that he was, the outcome, he had to go through some things.
Okay. Go ahead.
Was someone struggling for his power?
Someone's struggling for his power? What do you think?
I think that's what Satan is doing.
Okay, so does that mean God was in a power struggle?
I don't think he's finished.
Okay, Satan's not finished, but do you think God was in the power struggle then?
I think he was the response of the attack.
Response of the attack, go ahead.
I think Satan was in a power struggle, and he lost. Now he's just mean.
Now he's just mean, huh? Go ahead, you're going to say something.
I think the only struggle that God had in it was he had to allow things that broke his heart.
He had to allow things to break his heart.
Yeah, it's a patience struggle.
Patience struggle.
We've got to have enormous patience waiting for us to decide and choose the right path, to make the right decision.
Choose the right path. Go ahead.
You know, Pastor Kevin, in fact, a couple weeks ago, used a graphic illustration of this. He said, on D-Day, we won the war. But that didn't stop the Germans from raping and pillaging every village they possibly could throughout Europe. And I think that that's a very good analogy of what we're dealing with right now, that the war has been won, but it doesn't mean that he reigns in our world. And the devil, we're told, he is going to go about. He knows his time is short. Mm-hmm.
So you're saying God was in a power struggle and he won?
I'm saying that, there was a war and he won.
In my belief as a therapist, when people come to see me, I don't think anybody's a winner in a power struggle. I don't believe anybody's a winner in a power struggle. Think of it. Power struggles, you're trying to get something. You're trying to get something from that other person. You wanted to be declared the winner. I have people come in with power struggles in a marriage. I have people come in with power struggles with kids. That's a pretty common one. And if you're in a power struggle with a child, you've already lost. And the child is lost too. They feel like the winner, but they're lost. Think about committees. Think about church boards. Think about their power struggles. School boards. I've personally been involved in power struggles at my personal level and then as an organization. They are ugly. And everybody loses. John's writing about Diocletian. Is that how you say his name? John's writing about power struggles. Think about the early church at that time. In things, in new beginnings, there's a lot of excitement. There's a lot of things that happen. But what? There's also a lot of jockeying for position. There's a lot of people trying to get different places. So John's writing about an individual who's making himself up as the authority. And that happens in any kind of organizational thing. You know, in a church organization, in a school organization, you have authority. But John's writing about power struggles. And it's my belief that you have to recognize if you're in a power struggle, you've lost. I personally don't believe God has been in a power struggle. I don't think He's been in a power struggle at all. Because in a power struggle, you don't have power. You're trying to get power. Talking about D-Day, we were fighting the Nazis. We were fighting Germany. We were fighting a mindset. Did we win? Well, we stopped that. But truthfully, in any kind of power struggle, you're going to continue that whole thing going. So I think it's important to look at, and I want to look at different places there's been power struggles in the Bible. Would you look that up and read that for us? You know, so there's some classic examples of power struggles. And what I think it's important to look at when you're in a power struggle, you really are lost. You've lost yourself. You've lost your identity. You've lost your sense of personal sense of self. And you're trying to get it. And you're believing that other person can give it to you. I mean, I've been in situations with kids when I was early on. I remember an experience I had. I was taking care of kids after school, going to North Texas, getting my undergraduate degree. And I told this one boy, I said, you need to pick up that stuff that you put in that tire. It was time dismissal. The van was leaving. He was going on the van. And he said, I'm not doing it. Went and got on the van. I felt defeated. I felt defeated, and I went in and I talked to Diane, who was the director of education. She and I have been working together years, and I said, what could I have done? I just felt defeated. And the thing that I remember her saying to me was simply, you could have said, no, you're not going home until we work this out. I said, well, then what? She said, who knows what would have happened? He might have, you and him might have had a relationship where you sat there for 2 hours and then you might have taken him home. You've got to know how to realize that when you have authority, you don't have to fight for authority. And it's a masterful thing. I tell parents all the time, don't say something that you don't know how you're going to follow through on. It's better not to say it. Why? Because you then are going to get in a power struggle to make sure that kid does it. And it's a really interesting thing. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. 3 people who had opportunities to really exert their own power. And what's fascinating in this kind of situation, It was simply a matter of, they could have just bent down and said, I'm tying my shoes. They could have said, oh, I'm stretching. I've got to just do something here. Oh, okay. Oh, yes. Feel so good now. They could have done a lot of different things. They really could have. And you think, well, maybe it would not have been that big a deal. But to them, it represented something very important. Read there, would you, Ron?
This is Daniel 3:16-19. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered the king, Your Majesty, we don't want to stand here and defend ourselves, but we will say that we've already thought this whole thing through and have made our decision. It's true that we didn't bow and worship before the golden statue, that you have set up, but if that's considered being disloyal to Babylon, what can we say? Our God, whom we serve, is able to defend us if he chooses to do so. But if not, your majesty can be sure that we will not worship the Babylonian gods, nor bow in worship before the golden statue. Then the king became raging mad. His face turned red with anger as he looked at Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Immediately he ordered his men to make one of the blazing furnaces seven times hotter.
Look at that situation. Who was in a power struggle? Nebuchadnezzar. Here's the king. Here's the man who rules this mighty Babylon. And he's in a power struggle with three men who are not doing what he wants. Were Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in a power struggle? They just simply said, "We've already thought it out, king. We don't want to waste your time. We've already made our decision. We're not going to do it. And if our God, whom we serve, chooses to save us, fine. If he doesn't, we're still not going to do it." To me, that is how we handle situations in conflict. You can have conflict without a power struggle. Nebuchadnezzar was in a power struggle. His face turned red. His rage. Get that seven times hotter. Seven times hotter. When we're in a power struggle, we say stupid and do stupid things. Seven times hotter is going to burn them? How ridiculous. Have you ever had that experience? You've been in a power struggle and you thought later, "Wow, what was I thinking?" We're not thinking. We're emotionally charged. We're just simply locked into that, trying to get whatever we think we have to get from that person to feel like we're a winner and we're going to get it no matter what. Nebuchadnezzar, power struggle. The three men, king, we don't. If this is what it means to be disloyal, that's not our intent, but we're not going to bow down. What a dynamic way they handled that power struggle. To them, it wasn't a power struggle. It was a conflict.
Apparently, then, power struggle creates aggressive behavior.
It can?
Because it means that you are, you know, it's kind of butting heads and so forth. So there's another example that God could not have been involved in a power struggle.
Absolutely. I don't believe God is involved in a power struggle. When we think about it, when he said, "It is finished," on the cross, when Jesus said that, what was finished? The power struggle? It's finished. I've won.
The plan of salvation.
The what?
The plan of salvation.
The plan of salvation.
The example.
I like to look at Ellen White in that area, and she talks about the Desire of Ages. Not until the death of Christ was the character of Satan clearly revealed to the angels or to the unfallen worlds. The archapostate had so clothed himself with deception that even holy beings had not understood his principles. They had not clearly seen the nature of his rebellion. That's what was finished. They had shown to reveal the nature of the Lucifer. Now, was it a power struggle on God's part? No. I don't believe so. I don't believe God is trying to regain power from the Lucifer. God is wanting to reveal who Lucifer was. Go ahead.
So, if I understand, you're saying that the terminology needs to change? God was in a conflict and Satan was in the power struggle?
I believe that. We can have conflict. Yeah, we can have conflict, but it doesn't mean we get in power struggles. Those three men had conflict. There was conflict. It was ordered everybody bow down or you're going to be thrown in this fiery furnace. There was conflict. But those three men just stated their position. This is what we've thought through, Nebuchadnezzar. This is our position. Here's where we are. And I think it's real important that we take this on a practical level. When we have conflict, can we identify within us when we're caught in a power struggle? What are the cues for you when you recognize you're in a power struggle?
Being when I feel adamant about having my way and the other person has the same way, so it becomes positional and territorial, and nobody wants to give in, but I really like this conversation. and it just makes sense.
Positional, that's an interesting thing. We want a positional thing. It's such a challenging thing to sit and talk to couples in their relationship, and they sit there and they want me to be the judge about who's right and who's wrong. And my standard answer is, I avoided the legal system for a reason. It stinks. It's lousy. It's the lowest form of communication. So I don't want to go there. But that's exactly what they want to do at times. So if I want to be declared the winner, I'm in a power struggle.
So what should Nebuchadnezzar have done?
What should Nebuchadnezzar have done?
He was the man in authority. He made a statement. Mm-hmm. Others were supposed to do what he said. If he doesn't stay in control of the situation, he loses his power. What should Nebuchadnezzar have done?
Go ahead.
I think the answer is he should have done exactly what was it he did with that. Well, somebody did with Daniel. I don't know.
Darius, wasn't it? Darius.
Yeah, he said, "God put you down in that den. I sure hope your God takes care of you down there." And are you still there? And then in the morning, he comes out. Are you still okay, Daniel? I mean, see, he was in a power struggle. I mean, he got himself into a position where he couldn't back down.
Well, what did Nebuchadnezzar do? Let's finish the story. What did he do when he saw the four men in the fire?
He followed through with what he said.
He followed through in what he said, but then what did he do after that?
He recognized that Jesus.
He recognized that God was the supreme God, and that he had it all wrong. I think if we're in a position where we think we have to maintain control, we better recognize that something's wrong. Amen. Something is wrong. I don't care if it's a church. I don't care if it's an organization. I think we've got to realize if we're trying to maintain and keep in control of everything, then something's wrong. And that's a challenging thing. I mean, in a marriage, if you're trying to maintain control, so you got your wife, you got your husband, you got this, you got them to do this, and if you let them, something's wrong here. And that's exactly what Nebuchadnezzar came to. Oh my. The men that threw him in died. The men that are in there are not singed at all, except the robe. Go ahead.
Do you think that is finished and dedicated himself to all of heaven? Do you think there was any fallen angels who realized they were wrong and wanted to go back? Could they have gone back?
I don't know.
I thought that same question.
I don't know. when I think about it, I've read different places where the difference between the angels and Lucifer and the man is that God worked awfully hard with Lucifer from the beginning. And I would imagine he did with the fallen angels, and that once they made that decision, I don't think they committed. I think there was no way they would turn that direction. The unpardonable sin becomes such an interesting thing, and it becomes a fear-based. Ernie, shed some light on this.
Well, first of all, there's no power struggle in Sue's and my engineering. That's exactly when she said, this is what we're going to do, what that means. To answer your question, I have to believe that God continues to reveal himself up to the final end, which we have the great panoramic view. Mm-hmm. And I believe that any time any person in the universe, angels, or human beings turns and says, I've made a mistake, that God will accept.
Okay.
Now, I agree with what you said. He worked with the angels over and over and over and over, and they were so set in their ways that even all of this happened,
didn't change what was inside of them. Mm-hmm. But to ask the question, could they? Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. God says, my eyes run to and fro across this entire universe looking for one person that I can save.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when we, I think it's important we look at power struggles and make sure we tend to put things in our own finite world and we tend to put that on God.
Amen.
And we've got to be careful that we all like a winner. We want to worship a winner God. Go ahead, Randy.
Well, I think they may have realized that they've made a mistake, but you can call it pride or you can call it, whatever. They don't change. Mm-hmm. They realize, how many times have you realized you're making a mistake, but you says, I'm going to press on anyway because that's,
I've got to now. I've committed myself.
Right. So, save face or whatever you want to call
and,
it.
And that's what I hear all the time with parents. Well, I had to go ahead and do this. Wow, now you've got CPS involved. Go ahead, Ron.
I guess I have to read this.
Go ahead.
It's kind of answering Diane's question. It fits into the discussion here about what the king did. After he witnessed mm-hmm. what happened in the fiery furnace after they were tied up in the fires, etc., he said, then Nebuchadnezzar said, praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who sent someone to rescue his servants, because they put their trust in him. They were so loyal to him that they disobeyed my orders and risked their lives rather than bowing in worship before any God except their own. Therefore, I make this decree. Anyone who speaks disrespectfully of the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, no matter what people, nation, or language group they come from, they will be torn to pieces limb from limb, and his house will be made unto a public toilet. There is no other God who can save his people like the God of the Hebrews. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and put them in complete charge of the province of Babylon. Now, when you read the before and after, you have to ask the question, in which situation did Nebuchadnezzar feel more in control of himself? When he made the stupid decree, or later when he recognized where the real power was from?
And I think that's an important thing. If we try to maintain power and oblivious to the reality, we're lost. We're really lost. Now, Nebuchadnezzar still has issues with extremity. We're going to tear him limb to limb. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. But you see, you know what? He acknowledged God.
Yes.
And he's got personality issues that he needs to come see me about. But, go ahead.
There is a difference in power and authority.
Okay.
And that's very important mm-hmm. in our lives, that there is a difference in power and authority. It's subtle, but it's important. Because the child must be taught that they have to respect my authority.
Only if they have a relationship.
With them, it's wrong. They should do what I say when they're small children. They should do what I say even if they don't understand or agree. And if you ever lose control of a small child, it's over. Now, I'm saying this to a counselor.
Let me tell you, I believe that when I tell a child to do something, that they need to do it for me and for them. But if I do not have a relationship with them, I guarantee you it's going to be pure power that I exert. And it's power because I'm bigger and they're smaller. And what's going to happen when...
That's why a wise parent demonstrates the love and the reasoning and the proper attitude
in being the one in authority. And if you do that properly...
Well, you've got a lot of words we need to interpret there. Properly and all of that.
They come to grips with it.
Well, but you know, it's real important to realize that sometimes it's hard to remember the little things that make up that. I had a couple in my office on Monday, and they were talking. They're divorced. Now they brought their two kids in, and immediately, in talking with them 5 minutes, they're not divorced. They're legally divorced. They're still as married as to each other as they were before. And, you know, situation, the mother calls the dad. He's not listening to me. And the dad's, you know, I can't do anything about it. You know, crazy situations. But these are what occurs. And you know what I told that mother? Privately, I said, sit down and play a board game with your son, your two boys. I sat in my office and we played Trouble. Those boys enjoyed playing Trouble with me, and we had the greatest time. We would knock each other out, and, oh, you got me, and I can't get a six. We had more fun playing Trouble. And I tell you, that mother has no authority, no power, because she doesn't have a relationship. And that is an important thing, because a lot of times we want to emphasize the power aspect instead of the relationship. I tell people that have teenagers, the only power you have is with your teenager right now is the relationship. So if you try to, if you're not focused on the relationship, you have no power. And think of that analogy. It's the same with God. If we don't have a relationship, what is it? Then we're worried about what we're doing, what we're not doing. Go ahead, I'm getting wound up here.
I don't know if I can agree with, if I understand the need for the relationship. Mm-hmm. I understand the positiveness that mm-hmm. that would give. But even if you do have a relationship, your child still has a choice.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
The relationship helps. But even with Lucifer, God had a relationship with his child, Lucifer. He still chose.
Absolutely. And I'm not trying to make responsibility. Yeah. When I tell a child to come here, they have choices.
Right.
The two choices I know of is either you come on your own or I help you come. But that's a choice.
And the relationship enhances that.
And the relationship enhances that. And that's exactly important. I think that's a great clarification. And you know what we have to remember is, in power struggles, we are really trying to get something that we don't think we have. We're trying to get something we don't think we have. But the truth is, we have it. Did those three men have their personal authority? Did those three men have conviction? Absolutely. They knew in what who they believed. They knew what they thought. They were together in it. Go ahead.
Well, I was just, you know, we're talking about words. And there's a difference between authoritarian and authoritative.
Oh, absolutely.
And so you can have the authority, just like you just said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego had the authority. Within themselves and within their relationship with God to say, I'm not going to bow down. But the king was being authoritative.
Absolutely.
And that's made the difference.
So. Absolutely. And these are good clarifications. And let's keep it applying it to our life. How is it in our life when we get caught in situations where we've got to get it just this way? What's going on? Go ahead.
I think that authority with Daniel's situation, where the king had to follow through and put him in, mm-hmm. even though he didn't want to, mm-hmm. and also with Nebuchadnezzar, where they had, you know, the conflict here was not with those three boys in the fire. The conflict was between the authority that Nebuchadnezzar had with the authority of God.
Absolutely.
And God allowed Nebuchadnezzar. He could have zapped him right in front of all those people and chaos in Babylon. He allowed Nebuchadnezzar to follow up on his own authority. Because when he said, I'm going to put you in the fire, he did. Mm-hmm. And that the people saw that he had authority to follow up on his decree. But then, after he saw that he meant business and he followed up on it, he saw the change of heart. And then allowed Nebuchadnezzar to give a new law.
Yeah.
He spoke the law. So he never... discredited him in any way.
That's true. He really did. And that's an important thing. God allows and sometimes when we're in our power struggle, we have to realize we're acting as if we know all. If we're the G-O-D. I know what needs to happen here, and this is what should be. Go ahead.
Was God really working with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, or was he working with Nebuchadnezzar? Or was the real lesson being taught?
Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego didn't have conflict.
That wasn't an issue. God knew that they had the faith.
Amen.
He was really working with Nebuchadnezzar.
Absolutely. And those three men didn't have conflict. They said, oh, well, quit wasting your time. We already thought about it. You know, Nebuchadnezzar, well, think about it. When this happens, get ready and think, make sure you know what you're doing. We've already thought about it, King. We don't want to waste your time here. Just, we know what we're doing.
You know, that power struggle issue, that can work in both ways. It can be harmful, too, because when you have a power struggle, people are watching you.
Absolutely.
If you're in a group, people are watching you. And of course, what you do, say for instance, if you give a person a command or whatever, and you're really adamant about it, and whatever decision you make, they're watching you, and they say, well, that was totally wrong. But most times, people won't come up to your defense and say, hey, man, that was wrong. Especially like management, they won't say that was the wrong decision you made, because they'll feel maybe. They might get retaliation against them, but because of the issue, because of the decision that you made, the whole group looks at you in a different way now, and you lose all that power. You lose that respect because what you did to that person said that was totally wrong. So now, because you use your power, your authority to chastise someone or do whatever, they look at you in a negative way. So it can be harmful towards you in that aspect.
You always lose in a power struggle. I think that to me has come so clear in all the work I do. Everybody loses in a power struggle. Because in a power struggle, you have to declare a winner. And even if you're declared the winner, let's go look at the life of Jesus. And he crucified. Did the Pharisees, did the priests and rulers who went out to get him crucified, did they have peace? Did they celebrate that night? They were scared to death. Ellen White says in one of her statements here, they had jealousy of Christ's influence with the people when living. They were jealous of him in death. They dreaded the dead Christ far more than they ever feared the living Christ. That speaks about power struggles. When you're in a power struggle and you win, what do you have to do? Reinforce my position now. I got to make sure next time I let them know it. And then you, and this happens in all kinds of situations. Go ahead.
I had a situation this week where a friend of mine called me, and she had been in conflict with her daughter, who is much older than a small child, that didn't want to clean her room. And she's living in the mother's house. And she said, Sharon, I put my foot down, and I said, you're going to have to do this, you have to do this, or you're getting out. And then a big fight ensued, and she's like, I've never had to do this. We have such a great relationship. Why is this happening? And she was like, I just didn't like the power struggle of it. And just knowing that dichotomy and looking back, I really said to her, did you have to struggle?
Yeah.
This is your home. Mm-hmm. This is your child. Do you really have to struggle? So her question was, well, what should I have done? Mm-hmm. I had to show her who was in control. What should I have done?
What does God do with all of us? This is His world. This is His. We are His creation. And what does He do? He says, where are you going? What you doing? Do you know what's happening now?
And look at the cross.
Yeah,
even when he was on the cross, the priests, the rulers, even the disciples, everybody was saying, if you have so much power, why don't you just do something?
Yeah.
And God says, we really don't tell God what to do. I have power. I will still have power. Even when the devil thinks he has triumphant, mm-hmm. I still have the power. And I don't have to prove it.
Absolutely. When we have to prove something, that means we're not sure of it ourselves. If I can prove to you and you believe it, then maybe I will believe it. If I prove to you that I am blah, 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 then maybe, and you believe it, then I believe it. We're always trying to get something from somebody else because we're not sure we really believe it in here. If I have to prove that child that I'm in charge and they then believe me, then okay, now I know I'm in charge. So and so, I got the biggest class bully to believe me. Wow, what a ridiculousness. Ridiculousness. And I like going back to the lesson how John talked about. Well, when I get there, I'm going to go and we're going to take somebody there and we're going to talk to him. Have you ever talked to somebody who's in a power struggle? It's hard to reason with them. I work with a lot of young kids and I tell them, you know, when you're really mad, you're not using your smart brain. And that's really what happens to us when we're in a power struggle. We're not using our smart brain. We're not using the God-given ability to reason, be reasonable together. We can have conflict. If all of us got together and created something, we'd have conflict. That's not the issue. That's not even a problem. The problem becomes when we make that conflict and then we have to have it a certain way. Then we have to do it. Was there conflict in heaven before Lucifer decided to turn away and break the cycle of love with God? There wasn't conflict. But he introduced, he kept thinking about, well, I should be as important, or I should be up there. Why wasn't I in that position? And at that very moment, the power struggle began in him. The turmoil began in him. That happens in all of our lives. Well, why does so-and-so get this and I didn't get it? Why does so-and-so happen that this happened? Why did this person get this? This is human behavior. And I think, to me, when I'm in those kind of conflicts, I have to do the same as those three men. What's my position? What am I going to do? How am I going to handle myself? In a power struggle, we don't really focus on ourselves. We focus on what we're going to get that other person to give us. Whether it be an affirmation we're right, whether it be a legal thing, whether it be a financial thing, we're going to get them to do it. I was in court a couple weeks ago, sitting waiting to testify. And, you know, court's a terrible place to go because their time is everything and your time means nothing. I sat there for 2 hours and sat there and I thought, well, I was observing this, and I was outside the court, and there was two lawyers in an office. They would go into the office, right off the courtroom, come out, talk to each other. Well, I think I can get her to agree to this. I think he can agree to this. They'd go back. They'd come back, and I'd listen to that conversation for about 30, 40 minutes. And I thought, how sad. The last thing he said, and she wants her $75 today before she leaves court. And part of me just wanted to laugh. I want my $75 before I walk out of this. And why? Why does she want her $75? So I can feel like I got that money out of him. I won. And you know what? The sad part is, she's already lost. He's lost. And I know these kind of conflicts arise. I'm not immune to it. I'm not saying, oh, they should never. What I'm saying is, we've got to know how to handle ourselves in those conflicts. You know, if we believe we're loved by God, if we experience being loved by God, what does that do for you in your life? If we believe God is in control of this world, then what are we fretting about this or this or this? Doesn't mean we don't attend to it. At our center there, we're a small organization. Finances has always been issues. And I'm the director, but also do the treasurer part of it. You know, took some money out of savings last week to cover things. I thought, boy, I started getting anxious. And I thought, what am I anxious about? You know, if God is in control and I'm doing my part, who knows what's going to happen here? I don't know. It's not mine to know. Mine is to do my part. Those three men said, we know what we're going to do. And if God chooses to save us, fine. And if he doesn't, they didn't put God in a position, okay, we're going to do it, and you'll find out, Nebuchadnezzar, who's the real God. You'll see, and you're going to be really sorry. And you guys throwing us in, you're going to die. You know, they could have easily strut their stuff and said, look it, who am I? We know the right God. No, they didn't do that. They simply said, we know what we're going to do. If God chooses to save us, fine. If he doesn't, we still aren't bowing down. And many other people had died doing that very same thing. That's an important thing to remember. It's not just, you know, we read the story about those three, but that doesn't mean everything comes out all right for everyone. But it does in the long run. Those three men knew this was not the focus. God's more interested, as Ernie said last night in our study, God's more interested in about the second death. He's not worried about the first one. We're impacted by the first one. We're distressed by it. But he's interested in that second death. Those men knew, hey, this is what the important is. And we're not going to make this our focus. So sometimes we get our focus narrow and we get focused on certain things, and that has to be the thing we get focused on. And in that point, we get the power struggles. I got to get my $75 before I get out of court. He may have blah, 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 but I'm going to get out, walk out with my $75 check. Of course, he probably went and canceled the check. And that's really what happens in power struggles. Everybody loses. The Pharisees thought they got rid of this Jesus Christ. Everything's going to be fine. They had no clue of what was going to happen. They had no rest. Yet the priests and rulers, this is the Desire of Ages in 771, the priests and rulers were not at rest. They had carried out their purpose in putting Christ to death, but they did not feel a sense of victory they had expected. Have you ever had that happen where you think, I'm going to get, and you've been declared the winner by a judge, by some group of people, or somebody said, well, you won, and you thought, wow, this doesn't feel good at all. I don't think this feels like anything, you know? They did not feel victory. Even in the hour of their apparent triumph, they were harassed with doubts as to what would next take place. Any kind of power struggle involves what's going to happen next. Because if I've got my power now, I have to find ways to reinforce it. You look at this in the individual level, in a family level. You look at it as a nation level. What are we constantly doing and talking about? How do we find ways to secure ourselves? How do we find ways to feel more secure? You know, someone was going to blow up a building in Dallas over the last week. And we're looking for ways to constantly make sure we're going to be secured. That just shows you the power struggle of this world. And there's no rest in that. And to me, the beauty about the relationship with God is he said, I've got rest. I understand this. Come, follow me. And there's such beauty in that, and there's such a peace. That's what the Sabbath day is meant for, a day for rest, for us to get away from those experiences and to say, oh, wow, we're at peace. And I think that to me is a beautiful thing to recognize in, if we have that belief in God and we recognize the second death is the important one and that we're in relationship with God. He says, I'll give you rest. David, what did the Psalms? All kinds of things. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. In Isaiah, there's a text that Kevin talked about several weeks ago. Chapter 30, verse 15. In repentance and rest you shall be saved. In quietness and trust is your strength. The next thing is, but you were not willing. How many of us realize it's in repentance and rest we will be saved? In quietness and trust is your strength. not in who's the loudest, who can give the best argument. It's in quiet and rest is your strength. To me, that speaks volumes about Jesus and his life. In quietness and trust was his strength. And I think we have that same opportunity today. In quietness and strength. And that requires us to understand a little about ourselves and what we believe. And how does that belief make a practical reality in our life today? That's my concern. Shall we pray? Dear God, we're so grateful we can come together and recognize the truth about you and your character. We recognize when Jesus said it is finished, that he was declaring that his truth and the love is truly understood more clearly. And that Lucifer and his ways have been unmasked. May we in our life as we live it today remember how you love us and you care for us and you want us to enjoy ourselves and live fully. Thank you for this day and bless us as we continue to enjoy ourselves. Amen. Thank you.